What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode 229 of the Massive Breakdown Podcast. We have a fantastic episode for you tonight. We're going to be talking about all things Trials. I could not have picked a better week to talk about Trials. This is going to be a two-part episode. In the first part, we actually are going to be talking about the new Trials changes that are out, that are upcoming. They talked about them in the TWAB today. Some of them are very good. In my opinion, one of them is extremely bad, but we will talk about all that. We're also going to talk about the Trials meta. We're going to go over those numbers of how everything has shaken out over the first week of Trials and competitive. The meta has not solidified itself, but it has gotten into a much more stable place than it was in the first week of the season. So we're going to talk about that. And then we are also going to break down all of the Trials weapons that have been reprised with new perks. There are five of those. And then we're also going to talk about Reed's Regret, the new heavy linear fusion rifle that is the stasis damage type. So we're going to be talking about all that. Again, it is going to be a two-part episode. I'm going to try to get them both out Friday. We will see. If I can't, then we will do a Saturday release, you know, to celebrate Trials weekend and everything like that. But first, let's get the introduction out of the way. As always, I'm your host, Mercules, joined tonight by Kit Kutcha. And how are you doing this evening, Kit?
Well, Mercules, to be frank, I had a pretty stressful last 24 hours or so. Daughter came home sick with a fever and a sore throat. And up until we were able to get a test for her the next morning, I was pretty stressed. It is surprisingly hard to get your hands on a test or an appointment to get a test down here. And so we really didn't even try very hard in the evening because everything is sold out and booked up here. So yeah, but fortunately it's just a cold. So definitely took a load off, for me right there, finding that out, late this morning. So yeah, so it's just been a roller coaster. You know, I've got a big trip coming up, and so it was like, do I need to cancel my trip? Like, I've got plane tickets, I have to figure out hotels. Like, this is a big deal. Aside from, like, obviously I was worried about her health first. But then it's like, boy, if she was going to be sick for a week, like, it could have been any other week of the year. And it would have been okay. But yeah, no, she's already better. Like, girl's going back to school. She's fine. So
those kids are resilient, man.
Yeah. Yeah. They bounce back a lot faster than I do. Yeah. So I'm, needless to say, ready to not think about adult things, ready to think about video games.
Well, there's certainly a lot to think about. The TWAB, which I don't think anybody expected to have as much, of an effect on people as it did, came out, and Trials first week went off really, really, really well. I think better than anyone expected. So it's been a week of surprises. But we would be remiss if we didn't get the housekeeping out of the way first. I believe we actually have quite a few people to thank this week. Do we have any new patrons?
We do. Yeah. So we have a lot to get through. We have two new patrons this week, and then we've obviously got our sponsors to thank. So let's get to it. Coming in, joining the patron train, we have King Coil. Thank you so much for your pledge and support. And we also have Binary Wolf. And we see what you did there, Binary. And we may be talking again in a couple of weeks here, as is tradition. So thank you so much for your pledge. We deeply appreciate your support, as we do that of all of our ongoing patrons who give so generously. As we occasionally like to remind you, we are the public radio of Destiny Podcasts. This is the advertisement. We name guardians who support the podcast. We don't name microphones or smoothies or I don't know. What do people
energy
name
drinks,
these things? Yeah, energy
mice,
drinks, chairs,
gaming chairs, recovery websites.
Yeah,
which are much harder to use. Although we did run into a recovery last week, which I thought was interesting. But anyways,
point being, all you're going to hear from us is thank you to you, our listeners, our patrons, our reviewers, for the support that you so generously give us. And with that said, let's thank some sponsor guardians. So thank you so much to ZensoCal, Deacon, A Solitary Bird, Black Hammer Tech, Askian Monk, Conquer King 420, and the Chazal. These guardians go above and beyond. They are flared in the Discord with that bright orange flare that marks them not only as patrons, but as sponsors. If you see them, tell them thank you. And if you see any of our patrons who are flared with that bright yellow or gold flare, tell them thank you. Because they are supporting the podcast on a level that ensures that we don't need ads. We don't need anything, really. Microphones paid for by the sponsors. Star Wars episodes paid for by the sponsors. Hosting in perpetuity paid for by the sponsors.
Everybody benefits from all this stuff. Think about the sponsors.
And the patrons.
Made us have better sound quality. And the patrons made us have better sound quality. They made us have more episodes. And they make it to where we don't have to delete all of our old episodes because we can literally store hundreds of gigs of audio files on SoundCloud because we can afford to pay for the unlimited hosting. So thank you very much to all the patrons. Thank you very much to the sponsors. Technically, they are Jedi Masters is the patron level.
Indeed.
And Jedi Council members is the sponsors level. So you can, in fact, buy yourself a seat on the council. Don't make the same mistake Anakin did. Don't try to earn it through hard work. That's never going to work. Just use money and you'll be fine.
Yes, we saw how that ended for him. Palpatine had it right.
Which the only Sith in our Discord are unlinked guardians. Guardians who have not linked their console of preference. Why? Why don't you link your console? You get to choose green, blue, purple. You can be Obi-Wan. You can be good Anakin. You can be Mace Windu. It is up to you. But if you are unlinked, then you are red. You are the Sith.
That's right. That's right. That's just how we play it.
And speaking of Star Wars, Sunday morning, Rebels season one, going to be released Monday morning. Really excited about that for Beneath Twin Suns.
Yeah. It's going to be fun. I've been rewatching a little bit of Rebels and the show's just so refreshing. But let's not talk about that too much. Let's talk about some reviews because we are trying to keep this to a tight 10. And let's dive right into it.
Yeah. As far you saying tight 10 made the 14-year-old in me want to laugh for some reason. But where were we? Podcast reviews. Yes. The only people who matter to us nearly as much as the sponsors are the podcast reviewers. No, that's not true. Everybody who listens to us matters. Everybody who's in the Discord or follows us on Twitter matters. But we only shout out the sponsors and the patrons and the reviewers. So we have been on an absolute banger of a month. The month of September has been great to us for reviews. We have another three reviews to read out this episode. First one is Something to Look Forward To by Frost Phoenix. He says 5 stars. I started listening to your podcast after hearing about it through Firing Range, and it quickly has become one of the things I look forward to every week. I love how you guys explain things, and it's definitely enjoyable to listen to at work. P.S. You should try Le Monarch with the buffed Graviton Forfeit. It is an absolute blast. Well, Frost Phoenix, I know that. I have tried it. I absolutely loved it, but I'm a disgusting, disgusting Oathkeeper crutch, and I will stay that way until they pry them from my cold, dead hands. I 100% will be switching to Toptree Nightstalker when they inevitably nerf Shatterdive. Shatterdive is pretty much the only reason I'm still playing Revenant, besides the ridiculous stat splits I can get because of the fragments and everything.
It's the stat splits for me. I mean, Shatterdive is also very good. I'm not going to lie. It's very, very good.
I'm not sure if you guys saw my most recent bait meme. I was really proud of it. Super, super proud of it. And then I also came up with a Shatterdiving Elmo meme that I'm now using for like literally everything because it is somehow topical in any conversation. So I love Shatterdive. I understand it is too strong in its current state. Unfortunately, it is also the most effective tool to counter Shotgun Apes. And it's entirely how I use it, running two long-range primaries, and I'm still able to compete against Shotgun Apes because I have Shatterdive. So eventually that's going to go away, and my fallback, I've already been practicing with it, is Toptree Nightstalker, and I'll probably have to give Graviton Forfeit another shot then. But that is a long tangent. Thank you for the review, Frost Phoenix. I really appreciate it. All right, next review is from Dean Tack. It says, epic podcast, 5 stars. As a guy who took a pretty long break from all things Destiny, I'm pumped for an awesome show like this as I come back into the game. The dialogue, information, and just the excitement for the game makes me want to stay in the game. Thank you for taking your passion for this game and sharing it in excitement with all of us. Well, thank you very much. Dean Thack, for the review. We appreciate it. I'm glad that our excitement shines through. I hope that most of the time that excitement is positive, although I feel like sometimes the excitement can swing the other way around too, like it's going to tonight when I talk about the fucking trials changes.
Oh boy.
I'm a salty, salty man tonight.
We're gonna try to keep Grandpa Merc from going too crazy here.
Bro, some dude on Reddit called me not only crotchety, no, he said not only is he a curmudgeon.
Yeah, he called you a curmudgeon.
He called me a curmudgeon.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a jerk. Anyways, back to positive things people are saying about us. The best way to get through a run. This one is from SF Goblin. 5 stars. He says, being a runner, I'm always looking for something to take my mind off, you know, the running. Not only is this a great show for that, but it's also my go-to listen to stay up on the Destiny Sandbox, which weapons fit my style, instead of just running the meta, how to lean into builds. Entertaining, informative, and lively, despite all the data, a must listen. Oh, I'm running a marathon on the 19th, so maybe make next week's show extra entertaining. Well, your wish is our command. Not only are you getting a show tomorrow on the 17th, but you'll have part two of that before the 19th. And then what day is the 19th? Is the 19th Monday?
I believe.
Yeah, look this up on the calendar.
It is actually Sunday.
Oh, it's Sunday? Ooh. Well, you're not going to have Beneath Twin Suns by then, sadly for you. But you will have at least 2 episodes of Massive Breakdown to go by then.
Well, props on the running. I am usually a runner, and then I smashed my ankle on a wooden board, and I have not really run. I think I've run 3 miles in the last 2 weeks, so, and they hurt, but we're getting back to it slowly.
We were this close to keeping it under 10 minutes, right? 12 minutes.
I mean, the intro took a couple minutes, so, you know, we can call it even.
And we had some really good reviews.
We did. We did have some great reviews. We had some great Guardians to thank. And now we've got a TWAB to talk about, and, I don't know if it's a great TWAB, but it's definitely a TWAB. So let's talk about some good stuff first. Like you said, trials, man, it blew up. Like it went off last weekend. Categorically, the biggest trials weekend that I can remember. And as far as I know, that's maybe ever happened. 750,000 plus players in trials, 237,000 flawless, 105,000 new flawless players who'd never been flawless before, at least not in Destiny 2. 2.8 million hours of trials played. Just think what we could accomplish if we did something productive with those hours. But instead, we chased flawless. Wait, I just went to a dark place. I'm sorry. Let's,
it is not the most... I'm looking at Trials Report, because you said this. Trials Report has a lifetime graph of every weekend of Trials ever. Players played. It is not the most popular weekend ever, although it is in the top 10.
I'll take it.
And it is by far the most popular weekend of trials in Destiny 2 if you don't count the first 4 trials of the 9 weeks. The first 4 trials of the 9 weeks, the first 2 had over 1 million players. The third one had almost 900,000 players, but the fall off of trials of the 9 was precipitous.
Yeah.
It was really bad. Original trials had... started over 1 million and then fell down to about 500,000 over like 20 weeks about. And then from 20 weeks all the way through, basically from Taken King all the way through to Rise of Iron, it like hovered relatively flat, like between 400,000 and 500,000, like every single week, just pretty much the entire time. And there were some weeks where it was like really low, and there are some weeks where it was kind of higher. Rise of Iron, it spiked back up, and then after Rise of Iron, it started to fall off, and then it started falling and falling and falling and falling, and it actually got as low as like 200,000, like right before the end of D1. Trials of the Nine came out, popped it way up. Trials of the Nine within like 20 weeks was down at like 100,000 players a week, which is horrendous. and it stayed that low almost the entire time till it went away. Trials of Osiris came back, and even when Trials of Osiris like first came back, it wasn't super popular. Like, I don't think we ever had a week over even like 400,000 players in Trials of Osiris ever until this week when we had over 700,000 players, which is crazy. And not only did we have over 700,000 players, but we had 250,000 players go flawless, 30%, which is really high, and 100,000 players went flawless for their first time. That's huge. It has got to be the most successful in terms of how much fun people had. Like, Trials of the Nine was more successful at first, but I don't think people had a lot of fun. This has got to be the most successful Trials weekend that they've had in D2 by a wide, wide margin.
Yeah, I would agree. Having played Trials of the Nine when it first came out, this Trials weekend was a lot more fun. I had fun then too. But this just felt better. And part of it, I think, is that there has been such a long road to get to this. Such a long, sad, lonely road for Trials, where it's just been really left out in the cold, occasionally out of the game. So it's really good to see it come out and have a great first weekend. The hope is that Bungie is able to capitalize on the success of that weekend to retain those players, keep people coming back. Obviously not every weekend, but I think that's actually going to help retention, that it's not going to be quite as frequent as it used to be. Give people a little more break, a little more time to build up the anticipation. So that said, you know, they are never content to leave well enough alone. There's always room for improvement, and they are taking a shot at trying to make it even better. And that shot is pretty contentious. At least part of it is pretty contentious.
We should talk about the positive changes first. They made a sweeping amount of very positive changes, right? We'll read those off, and then we'll go back to the one that's not so great. So it said, we're not happy about the experience of players who have had a streak of bad games just repeatedly getting thrashed 5-0. So we are enabling some matchmaking help if someone runs into several blowout matches. This temporary help will clear up once they start winning again. So you cannot go flawless by cheesing it, by tanking a bunch of games and then trying to win it, right? So basically, it's like if you are playing a bunch of 5-0 matches, it will match you up for someone else who's playing a bunch of 5-0 matches. And then one of you guys is going to win. And like eventually you'll win, but you'll stop getting 5-0 matches.
Yeah.
That's fine. That's entirely and totally fair. They are enabling quitter penalties. There's a 30-minute timeout if you quit out too many games. That's great. That's fantastic. They are going to Trials Lab, not this week, but next week. They are going to do Capture Zone Trials, which is awesome.
I'm actually super sad about that because I will not be able to play that weekend. So
I feel terrible for you. I have a fucking wedding that weekend, and it's my birthday weekend, and I have to go to this damn wedding. This is going to be the third wedding in a month that I'm going to have gone to. It is driving me insane, but at least I'll get to play Friday.
I'll be on a truly enjoyable vacation, so I have very few complaints, except that I was curious to play Capture Zone Trials, but
So happy. My biggest problem with last weekend, out of everything, was like I still hate elimination. Like, I don't think elimination is a fun game mode. I think it promotes a super toxic playstyle and like a super toxic reliance on things that generate immediate one hit kills, right? Because everything is so focused on get the pick.
Yep.
And I don't like that. So I'm really excited to see Capture Zone Trials. They're also going to be disabling getting special ammo when you get revived, which is huge. You will still get special ammo if you kill someone and when you start the round, but not if you die and they get brought back to life, which is a way that people were getting special ammo, like additional. They are disabling the matchmaking counter in Trials of Osiris, so you can't dodge 3 stacks anymore when you see the count jump up by 3. Those are all huge positive changes. Every single one of those across the board is a positive change.
Yep. Yep. 90% of the things that they had to say about what they're doing is really great. And I think is going to be really helpful for retaining population in the Trials playlist and maybe even growing the the population, which is, I think, the hardest thing to do. People who didn't give it a try last weekend, but come out to try it this coming weekend.
Then you come back to their biggest change, which is we aren't satisfied with the matchmaking experience for players after 7 wins. That area of matchmaking has significantly higher rate of 5-out games than we would like, so we're enabling a flawless matchmaking pool. However, we want to make sure that there are enough flawless players to maintain good matchmaking times, so we're waiting until Friday afternoon to turn this on. We've been watching player reactions and matchmaking analytics all weekend to make sure it's behaving properly. First off, I thought, oh, that's neat. They're taking the 7-win matchmaking pool, which is one pool, and they're going to split it into flawless and not flawless. And I was like, that's a freaking great idea. Like, that's super great, because if you're flawless at 7 wins and you keep playing on that 7-win card and you stay flawless, you get insane rewards. You basically get flawless rewards every single time you win, right? Which is great. It gives you a reason to stay on that flawless card and keep playing it. If you get to 7 wins and you're not flawless, right, you end up getting matched against those players. You could have played 100 games and won 7, or you could have played 100 games and won all 100, and you were in the same pool at that 7-win level. I didn't really feel like that was super fair. So I thought, okay, what they're going to do is, if you're at 7 wins and you're not flawless, you're going to play other 7-win people who are not flawless. And if you're at 7 wins and you are flawless, you're going to play other 7-win people who are flawless until you become flawed, and then you drop back down to the other pool. That's what I thought they were doing. I was like, this is a fucking great change. This is super smart. It makes sense. It's going to improve everything for everyone. It's going to make wins at flawless, at 7 wins, it's going to make it mean something, right? Like, if you put on those ornaments for like blocking people from getting to the lighthouse, like, that's going to mean something now. Win streaks at flawless are going to mean something. That's not what they actually are doing. What they are actually doing is, once you go flawless, you are elevated up into a flawless only matchmaking pool. And they said that if it takes too long to find you a match, they said it may drop you down to play against people who are not flawless. So basically what they're doing is, the second you go flawless, regardless of whether you reset your card, regardless of whether you lose, the second you go flawless, you are now kicked up into a pool with only other flawless players, which we know from last week, only about 30% of players went flawless. Out of everyone who played, only about 30% went flawless. To me, red flags going off everywhere. I absolutely hate this change.
So my biggest concern is that there's just not any real way that they will be able to achieve sufficient population for that pool. And it will result in a bad experience for those players, and it will result in that experience basically eating the whole weekend if they go flawless too early. And contrary wise, I am also concerned that a lot of players are going to look at that and say, okay, I'm going to throw my 7th match all weekend long until Monday, and then I'll go flawless and deal with it. It feels like, I went into trials over and over again, just to like do bounties, get the pinnacles, chase rewards. I played on, multiple characters. There was a lot of replayability that first weekend, and I am concerned that this is going to discourage it, not least because it is account based, not character based. So you cannot switch characters and go flawless on each character before getting put into this pool. It's not even encouraging you to switch to a different class. Once you're flawless, you're stuck. So I am concerned that it's just not really going to work very well on a fundamental level. That said, I was concerned that performance-based matchmaking might be a little too skill-based, and it didn't really feel very strong.
But there was a lot of opacity in what they said about performance-based matchmaking.
There was.
And we talked about that on the show. We said, look, there's a couple ways it could go. Here's one way it could go, where you basically don't feel it. You just don't play really awful players. And it ended up not even being that strong. right? It ended up being less strong than that. They're, you know, functionally, it was very, very weak performance-based matchmaking. But what you said about hurting the replayability, like, you know, people on Twitter are like, you're an elitist, blah, 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 blah. No, I'm not. Anyone who listens to this show knows I freaking despise Trials. I've hated that playlist for such a long time because I think that everything it promoted was what was wrong with PvP, right? This past weekend, I played 50 games of Trials. I went flawless twice, both times in a three-man. Once on Friday, once on Monday, right? So I bookended it with flawless runs. In between that, I exclusively played solo. I played 35 solo games. I played 35 solo games after I had gone flawless, right? I went in and I played on my flawless card solo, and it was pretty rough, right? And so I reset my card, and then I played a couple of low-tier cards, and I tried to, I wanted to go flawless solo. I knew it wasn't really probably in the books, but I wanted to try, and I got to like three or four wins a couple times and then, you know, would lose and I would reset my card. But it was fun. It offered replayability. I was legitimately like thinking about Trials this whole week. I have started practicing, like legitimately practicing, because I wanted to go back into Trials and like try again. I was like excited for that, right? So you took me, the person who hated Trials more than anyone, and within one weekend made me excited to play the game mode. And within one more weekend have now made me, this is how I look at it. If the matchmaking we had this week was in Trials last week, I would have done one of two things. I would have gone flawless on Friday and I wouldn't have played again for the entire rest of the week. Or I would have not played at all until Monday. I would have gone flawless and then I would have not played again. One way or another, you would have taken me from 50 games played over the weekend, played in two different fire teams with two different sets of three players, and played solo, and you would have boiled that down to one opportunity, one shot of 70 games, and then me being done for the entire weekend. And that's concerning because even though Trials didn't have the most players this weekend, it had the most games played per player ever. It actually had the most games played ever. It had almost, I mean, it had slightly more games played than the very first weekend of Trials ever in D1 with, you know, 75% of the players, right? So with 75% of the players, they played more games. People were playing it. There was so much replayability. I am not concerned specifically about like, oh, elite players are going to have a harder time or blah, 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 or like bad players are finally in the flaws. What I'm concerned about is that to me, this kills replayability for the center of the bell curve. The really bad players, maybe it improves their experience. The really good players, maybe they can't tell a huge difference. But for the center of the bell curve, I have immense concerns what this is going to do for replayability.
Yeah. You know, if you are toward the top end of that sort of, you know, we'll just say like above average, and it's hard to know if you are because Bungie doesn't really give you a clear way to know. Like you can look at ELO on third-party sites and things, and you can maybe guess. But a bell curve is a funny thing. And when you don't have full data from, you know, behind the scenes in terms of where it's actually putting you, it's very tough to know. But if you win more than you lose, we'll say, and you know, your KD, maybe it tends to be, you know, 1.5 and higher, just in general, chances are you're probably above average. At 1.5 to 2, definitely in that range. You have a chance to go flawless, especially if the population stays high. You get in with a team that you work well with, you have some good matches, maybe a little bit of luck in the matchmaking, you go flawless. And then, well, this one's for you, Liebeck. Then you're fucked. You can't do it again, right? Because now you have to play everyone else who's done it. And unless everyone else goes in good faith, I just don't see there being enough players. And I think too many people are going to be concerned about getting stuck to go in good faith. I'm not going to try to go flawless early in the weekend because I want to go in and not have to play flawless teams repeatedly all weekend long. So I'm going to play solo and then maybe Sunday I'll try to go flawless. It's just like it, it discourages playing the mode in good faith, which I think is too bad. Honestly, this change would probably have worked much better if they had not told us that about it at all. But people would have noticed, and then they would have accused Bungie of lying. And it's like, you know, if we just didn't talk about it and pretended it wasn't there, it might work, honestly. It's possible. I don't think it's great, but it might.
People would have noticed it really quick. Like, yeah. And this is what I try to explain. Yeah. Like, all right, if you are the type of player who doesn't notice a difference between your first game and your seventh game and games following your seventh game, right? Last week, if you were the first player who didn't notice a difference, you're probably a pretty decent player, or you're probably in a stack and like you're winning a majority of your games, right? Like there are teams out there that win 100 or 98% of their games. To them, it doesn't really make a difference, right? Like they're going to experience very little. If you are the type of player who notices a difference between game one and game seven, right? Now imagine that every game for the entire weekend, no matter what you do, no matter if you change characters, no matter if you reset your card, no matter if you pick up a different card, imagine that every game, once you've gone flawless, is game seven over and over and over again, except for you've also removed all the bad players from game seven. So it's the hardest games you faced at game seven over and over and over and over and over again, right? What's going to happen if, and let's say that it works out the best way it possibly could. Let's say nobody manipulates it at all. Everybody just plays fair and even. The first people to go flawless are going to be the very best players. They're going to be the players who stomp everyone no matter what. They're going to go flawless immediately, right? They're going to be the first people moved up into that flawless pool. The next players, now that those really great players have been moved out of the matchmaking pool, the next players to go flawless are going to be the above average players. So now the above average players get moved up into that flawless pool. The problem is that the only two groups of players in that flawless pool are the great players and the above average players. The above average players are now the worst players in their pool, and they lose constantly to the great players. So what do the above average players do? As soon as they get flawed or they reset their card and game one, they're playing flawless great players, they quit, right? Now you've got a flawless pool that basically just has great players and then a very small number of above average. The lower pool now, the average players go flawless. The average players now move up into the flawless pool. Who's waiting in the flawless pool for them? The great players. The great players fucking decimate them, right? So now those average players leave the flawless pool, because why would they stick around in the flawless pool? They have literally no shot of beating the great players, who are basically the only players left in this pool. Now you've got the below average players. They're the best in their flawed pool. Now the below average players, this is towards the tail end of the weekend. Now the below average players, some of them start to creep into flawless. Well, what's the first thing that happens after they get flawless? Who do they run into? The great players. And the great players obliterate them 5-0, right? Now those players leave that pool. So now the only people left in the flawed pool are bad players, because nobody else can play in it. You don't have the option to reset and play in it. So the only people left are bad players. And spoiler alert, they can't go flawless because they're bad players. Even bad players playing other bad players, they're not going to win 7 games in a row. So they're going to stay in that flawed pool, and it's just going to be bad players playing each other. And the high pool is going to be great players playing each other and anybody who foolishly steps foot into it, right? All the rest of the population, the above average, the average, and the below average, they are all going to drop out of the playlist once they get flawless. And that's if nobody manipulates it at all.
It's just, there's got to be some way that somebody thought about this that made sense at the time. But just looking at it from the perspective, of people who spent time in the playlist last weekend, it just is very confusing why this was the choice. The thing that I find encouraging is that, you know, we talked about this before, they clearly like planned to be able to do this. They can turn it on when they want to. And if you can turn it on when you want to, you can turn it off. And I really hope that that is what happens. I'm sure that they can come up with some other solutions. I mean, honestly, the 5-0 issue, maybe that gets fixed by the other fix that they put in for it already, where the matchmaking shifts you to not play people who are likely to 5-0 you until you start to have some better luck. That alone might be enough. Honestly, it didn't seem to deter people last week, and I got 5-0 plenty of times, and I kept coming back for more. So,
it was like, oh, I got 5-0. Okay, well, on to the next game.
The bright side was it was over quick, so I just moved on. You know, that's the best. Sometimes the best trials matches are 5-0 because you can finish them in a reasonable time frame, as opposed to like half an hour. So anyway, I digress, but
well, this we haven't even broached the subject of people just abusing the shit out of this matchmaking system, which is super easy to do. I've already seen people on Twitter saying that, oh, I'm going to get to 6 wins and then reset my card so I can stay in the flawed playlist the whole time. And then I'll just go flawless at the tail end of the week, because No matter what way you look at it, right? Like, if everybody's manipulating it, no bad players are going to go flawless anyways. They're going to get shit on by the people who are manipulating this. And the only people in the flawless playlist are going to be the good ones anyway. So no matter what way you cut it, like, it's going to be easier at the tail end of the weekend. Then you've got players like me who it's like, okay, as a solo player, as a player who doesn't have a stack that I play with, like, why would I play Friday or Saturday? Like, what benefit is there for me to do that if I don't plan to play after I get flawless anyways? Like, my best bet is literally wait till Tuesday morning. And then every single good player, for the most part, will have gone flawless by that point. And the only people left in the playlist are going to be terrible players. And if enough people start doing that, then bad players still won't get flawless, because there'll be people like me getting flawless at the tail end of the week. And it's like, this is so easily manipulated to have a negative outcome. This is so clearly bad for the playlist as a whole. Like, not even people make the mistake, I think, of thinking that going flawless is what makes this playlist popular. And that is not true. What makes the playlist popular is good rewards and the continued replayability of the playlist. Now, having the possibility of going flawless actually adds to replayability, even if they don't go flawless, right? If you have a team that enjoys their weekend and plays for 5 straight weekends in a row but doesn't go flawless, they'll come back for that 6th weekend. If you have a team that plays 7 games and goes flawless and then hates everything after that, they're not going to come back, or they're just going to come back for a couple games. This is bad for the long-term health of the playlist. And yes, we may end up having a 50% flawless week where 50% of players go flawless, right? And people, we may be celebrating like, oh, another 100,000 players got flawless for the first time. Great. That's fantastic, right? But if the games per player goes from like 7 games per player down to, you know, 4 or 5 games per player or anything like that, to me, that's a huge net loss for the playlist. Like, you are basically now artificially forcing population decline into a playlist where it's not needed. And what's worse is that there was a better idea. Like, when they described it initially, it was like, oh, that's a good idea. Like, that's super smart. And somehow they went past that super smart idea to like the nuclear overkill version of trials, where somehow going flawless once means you can't ever play anyone else. It's just crazy to me, man. It blows my mind. I legitimately can't believe how you can seemingly have such a firm grasp on what makes trials popular and make great change after great change after great change, and then just like after one weekend that was the best weekend ever, hit the nuclear panic button and just like nuke the playlist, basically.
Well, you know, it is too soon to say for sure how it's all going to play out. But I think what we can say for sure is that this is a very concerning change, and it would be, and I think this is what you were getting at, it would be much less concerning if this was something that you could opt out of by resetting your card. Because resetting your card takes you out of the 7+ wins chase. It means that the rewards that you get are less. You're missing out on all of those bonus things. So there will be people who would choose to stay in that high tier flawless list. But when you force people into it, what you take away is the option for people who just can't cut it in that flawless list. I'm raising my hand here. I'm not going to survive. And I don't want to be there. I don't belong there. And that's fine. I'm okay with that. But what I'd like is to be able to play Trials anyway and not just not be flawless. Like, right? Like, that's all I'm asking is, like, if I do go flawless, like, let me then keep playing and not going flawless after that, because it's not going to, I feel like it's not going to hurt anything to just let people keep playing, right? Like, that's the whole point. That's what a game is, right? Is something that you want to play more of. So
there's so many ways they could have done it. Like, they could have made it to where it was per character, so you could at least change characters.
Yeah.
And play. Like, they could have done that. They could have made it to where everyone in the playlist, regardless of, you know, status, once you're in that playlist, every game gives you a chance for the adept weapon, right? Or, like, every game gives you a chance for flawless rewards, right? So it's like, okay, well, you went flawless and now your experience is going to be shitty, but at least, like, we're going to give you really good rewards, you know, for
staying. I feel like that even that's not the way. Like, I think
it's bribing people to have a bad experience, but that's what, in fairness, right? That's what I've been saying to do for bad players for a long time. Like, you, if you want to get bad players into a PvP game, like, you have to bribe them, because their experience isn't going to be tremendously fun. And so it's like, you have to make it worth their time to be in here.
I think that, I don't know, this is a complicated discussion. I feel like we're getting a little off topic.
Well, you could have even made it to where if you were solo, right, it didn't put you in it.
Yeah, that would have been
great.
Because
if you're solo, like, who cares, man? If you're solo, like, you're helping two other players.
Yeah.
They're on your team if you're good. So it's like,
yeah,
dude, I feel like there are a million ways they could have done this, and it would have been better than what they did. I legitimately don't think they could have picked a worse way to do it than the way that they did. And I promise you guys, for the love of God, I'm not trying to be an elitist here. I am so far from that in terms of Trials. I have advocated for years that Trials should be for the everyman. I think this is a bad change for the everyman. People are like, oh, it's one bucket dumping into another bucket, right? Like, that's how I heard it described, right? Is you have one bucket, the flawed bucket, dumping into the flawless bucket. But the fucking flawless bucket has a hole in the bottom and it's bleeding players constantly. People don't just go into the flawless bucket and think, oh, this is fine, and sit there and stay there. Unless you're really, really good, your experience in the flawless bucket's going to suck, and then you're going to quit playing.
Yeah.
So it's not. It's one bucket dumping into another bucket with a hole in the bottom that's bleeding players. And, oh, it's just, it's like, I loved Trials so much last weekend. I was so happy. For the first time in a long time, I enjoyed it. And now this weekend, I'm just like, what's even the point?
Yeah, you know, I felt the same way last weekend. I have felt like, what is the point of Trials for a long time? Because it was just for cheaters and recovs and people who were ridiculously good, to the point where I couldn't tell the difference between them and cheaters. And so that just wasn't a place that I went. I know a lot of players felt similarly, and last weekend was awesome. And I just want more of last weekend. And I think this isn't it. So we'll see what happens. And we'll be back to say we told you so, or to say we were wrong. Whatever happens.
I would be so surprised to be wrong at this. Like, I know what playing flawless players look.
Yeah.
You know what's horrible? I'm a top 10% player in Trials, right? Literally, we were talking about this before the podcast. I was looking at my stats. I was like, how the fuck am I a top 10% player in Trials, right? That's not great, because I'm not particularly good at Trials. I have like a 1.3 KD. I've been flawless like 8 times. I'm not a great Trials player. This is comparatively to, I think I'm a very good Destiny player. Trials, I don't play it well. I don't like the elimination game mode. You know, it is what it is. I'm not a great Trials player. I, a top 10% Trials player, struggle at the like 7 win level playing against consistently flawless teams. I struggle at that level, right? I, a top 10% player, do not enjoy playing at that level. And that's only for like 2 games a card. That's like game 6 and 7. And then any games I continue to play on 7. Now that is every game on my cards. game 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, more than double the amount of exposure to that. Like, ugh.
Well, oh, that's like, only after you go flawless, but just, but
sure. So
you can, you yeah. can go and farm rewards and get the pinnacle and just play it solo.
But didn't we talk about perks that activate on fail states?
Yes.
Like you're basically telling me to purposely go in and fail.
I am
in a playlist. And like that's not fun as a player. Like you're supposed to be rewarded for being good. And by the way, guys, I know that people don't like salt in these episodes and we usually stray away from it. I am 100%. It's not going to help you guys now, but I am 100% putting a skip like thing in the description of this. And I'll talk about it on Twitter as well. Like if you don't want the salt, like you can just jump through this entire part because we're going to talk about the trials meta and everything like that. You can just skip this entire part. You don't even have to listen to it. So it's not, you know, it's not going to be like the worst thing ever, right? If you don't want to, because I know that we've been on this for a long time.
Yeah.
But people are saying like, wait and see. It's like, okay, but I already know what my experience was like when trials was just sweaty players. I played trials when it was just sweaty players before they brought in all these new players and it sucked. And then I played trials at the 7-win level. And except for when I played teams that were 7 and 100, it sucked then too. And so that's like me saying like, hey, I'm going to kick you in the nuts. Okay. But I want you to wait and see before you complain. Why don't you wait and see how it feels? Why don't you see if it's all right?
I think the problem here is that you're not incentivized by the bribery.
They're not bribing us. That's the problem. Like you get more rewards at 7 wins, but once you're flawed, you don't get like the flawless rewards after that, right? Like I'm not able to farm golf balls and I'm not able to farm adept weapons. So yeah, that's great. And that's why I thought they were going to do it where if your card was flawless, you were matched versus other flawless players. But now, okay, so great. I went flawless. Now my card is flawed though. And I'm still playing flawless players, but I'm not getting flawless rewards.
Yep.
And that's why I was said like, you could bribe me if you gave me flawless rewards. Like, okay, like, am I going to be happy about it? No, but like it's a super efficient farm. So, okay, yeah, I'll go do it and I'll bitch about it. But like, at least I'm getting rewarded for my time, which is how the bad players feel when we bribe them to play Iron Banner. Basically, it's like, oh, this fucking sucks, but I'm getting super well rewarded. So I'll go do it. Like, yeah, okay, I'll go do that. But they're not even doing that. So, you know, it is what it is. Like, I'm super heated on this. I'm incredibly salty. Now I'm being a curmudgeon, right? This dude on Reddit is going to have a fucking field day with this. And I'm sorry to the dad from last week who was like, you made it safe to talk. Again, I'll put multiple F-bomb warnings in the little skip thing. It was like, caution, very salty 30-minute diatribe about trials, matchmaking changes, multiple F-bombs, like skip this whole thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we've... Beat it into the ground. You know, ultimately, if you try it and it's not for you this weekend, I hear PvE has some great... loot farms going on.
What did Derek Carroll say long ago? Try strikes.
Yeah. Strikes. Try nightfalls. Get your team together. Go do it. You know, if you haven't tried legendary lost sectors, there's something new right there. We've got some haunted lost sectors coming up. Some haunted legendary lost sectors, I would imagine. So should be good things on the horizon. Time to start getting ready for that. If this weekend ends up not being for you, as it sounds like it may not be for us. That said, let's move on to something else.
The meta.
We've
given us some time to shake out, which is required after any big meta changes. And shake out it has in ways that are pretty surprising, and in some other ways that are really not surprising at all.
Yep.
When we look at the big winners here, to literally no one's surprise, including the weapon design team who told us about this on the podcast, Vex Mythoclast is very, very strong. Very, very strong.
This actually surprised me. I expected it to be effective, but it honestly is more effective than I expected. So... Now, I don't have a Vex Mythoclast. I don't believe you have a Vex Mythoclast. Unless you were insanely lucky at some point and I missed this.
Nope.
I don't know what percentage of people do have it, but apparently 5.5% of people in the Crucible are using it. And what really blew me away was not that, because I knew it was good. but that it is accounting for just over 7% of kills. So that's 5.5% using 7.1% of kills. That is hugely effective. Those people are seriously getting their money's worth in that slot. Like, dang. I do not want more people using Vex Mythoclast, but I cannot deny that it would be a smart choice for those players that have it.
Yeah, it's a wild outlier. Like, a wild, wild outlier. When we've talked about there being big disparities before, in terms of usage to kills, it was like Bastion with like 1.2% usage getting 1.6% of the kills. It was not 5% usage getting 7.1% of the kills. That means that this gun is very strong in the hands of people that are using it. I actually think the only reason it is not a much bigger problem is because not a ton of people have it, right? Like, not a huge percentage of the population raids, and out of the population that raids, an even smaller percentage has Vex Mythoclast.
I was just watching a Twitter thread about people who have counting off the number of raids they've done and not gotten it. And the number of people who have raided 3 times a week the whole time and not gotten it was discouraging.
It's not broken necessarily. I actually think so. My time with Crusher or Mello has shown me that high impacts are actually better auto rifles than I think people give them credit for, but they're auto rifles and so they struggle. I think it is right on the cusp of just being very good. I think two things, maybe three things, pushed it over the edge. One, I think the rate of fire buff was unnecessary. I don't think it needed to have a faster TTK. The 0.83 second TTK is just fine on its own. A 0.7 second TTK doesn't sound like a lot, but that's very fast, especially for a gun as easy as this. Two, it doesn't fucking need 100 aim assist, man. Like, it is a magnet to the head. And usually precision weapons are bigger aim assist like issues, but this thing has an absurd amount of aim assist.
Tell them the headshot percentage for those 7.1% of all kills.
It makes up almost 9% of all headshots in the Crucible.
Yeah.
So 5% of players getting 7% of kills, getting almost 9% of headshots. I mean, it is way too easy to use.
Ridiculous.
Like, and then on top of that, the range is also just ridiculous too. Now, the range is very effective, and then outside of its effective range, it's very quickly ineffective, right? The problem is that effective range, especially on, you know, something like mouse and keyboard, it's a little bit different because mouse and keyboard, like, it's more effective at longer ranges, but you also have hand cannons that are more effective at that range too. So it almost is like a trade-off. But really its only weakness that I've found is if you far and away outrange it, like with a scout rifle, especially something like Servant Leader. If you far and away outrange it, Mida, obviously, it's not going to be able to get you there as long as they don't have the linear fusion up. Or at very close range, something like a Shiura's Wrath. A Shiura's Wrath not only has a faster TTK, but it requires less crits. It has a more forgiving body shot TTK. And it's like accuracy adjusted TTK is actually also easier than Vex Mythoclast as well. So the only two ways I've really found to strongly counter it are to far away outrange it and to get very up close to them and just beat them with a faster killing gun. But that being said, in between those two extremes, there's a very long window of the gun just being absolutely dominant in its class. And good players are going to be able to peak shoot it with a hand cannon. But it's just, man, it's like you said, it's almost surprising how really, 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 really strong it is. Sometimes I call it a chainsaw. It's like you run up against it and you just get freaking mowed down and you're just like, well, yeah, that was Vex Mythoclast.
I mean, the number of times it killed me out of my super was, it was noticeable. It was just like, oh, nope, don't. Like, very much encouraged me to make better use of cover in my supers. Tell you
or
that
encourage
much.
You to go run Vault of Glass.
Yeah, also that. Like just so this just for comparison, I want to skip to number 3 on the meta list, which is also a weapon that gives some lift to its users. That is Ace of Spades, the exotic hand cannon, coming in with 3.67% of usage and 4.22% of kills. So that is an amount of lift that I would consider more normal. It's a very strong weapon. It has great stats across the board. It has a super strong perk in Memento Mori. And it's you know, giving some benefit. You know, half a percentage point above the usage, right, is where you find the kill percentage. That suggests this is a good weapon. And the usage is high enough that that's a good number of players who are using Ace of Spades. Half a percentage point, not a percentage point and a half. So, like, if you just look at, like, what benefit you're getting from putting a given weapon on your character and playing with it, if Ace of Spades is giving you 1 bonus point, Mythoclast is giving you 3. That's nuts. So I don't know. I think Mythoclast is in dire need of being brought down in the near future before people do start getting it.
And it sucks to be at this point because it's like everybody's like, oh, I haven't gotten it yet. Like, let me enjoy it and it's Birkin stay. It's like, nah, can't be done. But the real abomination of what Mythoclast has done is that it has wildly skewed the numbers for fusion rifles, like the usage numbers.
Oh, yeah.
So if you look at the fusion rifles the fusion rifle usage numbers back in August, they're like 5.6%. Yeah, Bastion up at the top, Jotun, Telesto, Glacial Chasm, Plug One, Exile's Curse, the other Plug One, Null Composure, down at like, you know, 101, pretty low down. Now, they're at 12.2%. Wow, fusion rifle usage has really gone up with the changes to fusion rifles. Nope, because Vex Mythoclast makes up 5.5%, and the other 2% comes from Lorentz Driver, the linear fusion rifle. So if you remove those two from the equation, fusion rifles are actually like dead even with where they are. Now there's been some changes. Obviously Bastion has fallen on hard times. At one point in time, it was as high up as like 14. It's now sitting down at 48. Jotun still just hanging out around 20. Jotun hasn't changed too much. Null Composure has been the really big winner here. Null Composure was down at like 100. It was hovering around the 99 to 100 range. And fusions actually took a hard dip at the beginning of the season, and their usage numbers have started to come back up as the season progressed. I think as people have started to get used to them, Null Composure is sitting up at 35. And I got to say, it's not easy to use, but in the right hands, rapid fire fusions are proving to be very effective in their current state. I think this is the best rapid fire fusions have ever been.
Yeah. Yeah, truly they are very good. I think a lot of people are really specifically loving Null Composure right now. And it has some great perks on it, so I can totally understand why.
Yeah. Plug One has fallen a little bit, not much. It was in the low 50s, now it's in the high 50s. Cartesian Coordinate has obviously come up. It's another rapid fire. Glacial Chasm, man, the high impacts just took a nosedive. Glacial Chasm was up at 40 before. Exile's Curse was at 70. Exile's Curse has entirely fallen out of the top 100. Glacial Chasm is about to. It's at 99. Probably won't stay there for long. I'm still using the high impacts. I'm still trying to hunt for a good roll. I was fortunate enough to get a roll the other day which had under pressure and high impact reserves. And unfortunately did not have liquid coils, but it does feel pretty good. So they are still usable. The risk is just probably a little bit too much for the reward for most people. But I'm really kind of surprised that even the precisions have just fallen a little bit. The precisions just got straight buff. You know, they didn't even get nerfed at all. They got a straight buff, just a straight up impact buff. And they've still fallen a bit. But I guess that's probably just people switching over to the rapid fires. I feel like most of the people who are playing the precisions before have probably seen that the very number one with rapid fires, you can basically go fully into stability bolts that are coming out, that a tight grouping of those bolts is very effective. Number two, you can pretty much do anything you want to charge time because they're so far overkill in terms of damage that you can drop that charge rate and still, you know, you can get it down to like 0.4 seconds. It's crazy, crazy fast. And their effective range is good. Like I'm seeing 15 plus meter kills with these things. And some even longer in the hands of really skilled players. So I don't know what the catalyst is going to need to be for like the average player to start picking them up and giving them a shot. But in my experience, I think rapid fire fusions are pretty strong.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I've been a little distracted. I've been meaning though, I have a long range zoom Prolium with rangefinder and accelerated coils that I've been meaning to pull
Sunset,
out.
Sunset, unfortunately, but a great control weapon.
It is, but for sixes, it's like 21
I
zoom.
I did take out an Arentol with long zoom and high impact reserves.
And it's stability master worked, so.
The zoom helps. I think they've learned their lesson about zoom on fusion rifles, though. You know,
I won't be getting another.
If we want to go down the rest of the list, right? Like we'd be remiss to not talk about the other two most meta of all things. Like where are shotguns sitting right now? And well, Felwinter's is seemingly where it always is, near the top. It's still at number two.
Yep.
Probably Felwinter's out of everyone's cold dead hands. No one will ever get rid of that gun. Felwinter's is number two. Fractathist is number five. Reese Walker's number six. The Chaperone has actually fallen down a little bit. It's back down at number seven. We have a ton of shotgun. 18 shotguns out of the top 100. Duality up there, Chaperone. I mean, they don't seem to be hurting too much, do they? They're at 19.4% usage, so still almost 20% usage.
Yeah. You know, and we're still seeing a lot of variety in the types of shotguns that people are taking out. Obviously, Felwinter's, I mean, it's got some great perks. It's been a favorite for a long time. People are used to it, and so they're going to just continue to use what's comfortable. But Fractathist, being in that precision, not the slug, but the precision slot, and then Reese Walker in the lightweight. Chaperone and the precision slug, you know, and then we just kind of see this repeated throughout, right? We've got a variety of different shotgun archetypes, which I think is great. It's nice to see people embracing different ways to use them and to lean into those different play styles and not have one type, which has pretty much always been the highest impact, except for very occasional periods. It's really nice to see that variety. One thing that I think is interesting is that if you just look at like usage to kills ratios, a lot of them actually don't come out looking very strong. And so people who think shotguns are super strong, most of the time they are not really improving your ratios. Honestly, the Chaperone is one of the ones that is most even in terms of if you take it out, you are probably effective with it. It's, you know, 2.68% usage, 2.66% kills. That's close enough to call it. If you're using the Chaperone, I guess you're probably good with it, or you're terrible with it and someone else is phenomenal with it, right? I don't know which one it is. But
the problem with those numbers is they're the tiniest bit misleading. Chris did explain to us, like, when they look at usage numbers, usually if something is easy to use, it is used by bad players. And if it's highly effective, it's used by good players. And if it's used by both groups, then they know that it's probably, like, too strong, right? And the thing with shotguns is that because they're easy to use, they're used by players across all skill levels. So you have very bad players who have a shotgun equipped because it's their best option, but they're not actually very good with it necessarily. They're just better with it than they would be with other special ammo options. So those numbers are the tiniest bit misleading. Yep. I think it's fine to generalize with those, but you don't want to say like, you know, if you put on, I don't know, a gun that has a difference, it's immediately going to make you better. Sometimes that's true. With Vex Mythic class, it's definitely true.
Right.
But you can't just 100% be like, oh, which gun has the highest differential between usage and kill percentage? And then like equip it and be like, I'm going to be good now, because it could be that it's only used by highly skilled players. Like bad players don't use it. So there's no one to drag the efficiency down.
Absolutely. Yeah. You can't look at the numbers in a vacuum. You have to consider, but am I capable of using this weapon effectively? Which is why Vex Mythoclast is right now at the top, because anyone can use it.
Anyone.
You know, it's an auto rifle. Well, maybe not anyone, but
pretty much anyone.
Almost anyone can use
an
auto rifle.
I've yet to see someone using Vex Mythoclast and being like, really, even a bad player can take Vex Mythoclast and shred you if just like, you know, if they just happen to like stumble into the right firing lane and you just happen to be on the other end. But regardless, you know, other meta weapons, hand cannons, hand cannon usage has actually gone down quite a bit. I would assume that that's a lot of people transitioning over to Vex Mythoclast. It used to be like 27.5%. Now it's about 22%. And the thing is, like, there's still a pretty similar amount of hand cannons in the top 100. I think it might actually be the exact same amount. Is that 22? Did I count that wrong? Is it 22?
Oh, I didn't actually total them up.
20. So 20 hand cans in the top 100. So between,
and there are some adepts in there kind of throwing off the counts.
Between, but, you know, hand cans and shotguns, you've got almost 40% of the top 100 made up of these two groups again. So they're still the most popular. Never fear. Always have been. Usage has come down. Ace of Spades is sitting up there at number 3. Thorn is number 8. Adept Palindrome is number 10. Crimson is number 15. The Last Word is number 16. Igneous Hammer is number 18. Fatebringer is number 22. So like basically in the top 25, you got 7 options that are all really, really strong. I don't know that there's any other single archetype or single class of weapon that is as well represented in the top 100 as hand cannons are.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. And it's honestly pretty much almost every single archetype is in there. You know, there's the 140s that are probably the most dominant right now. Crimson always doing its own thing. Very popular right now at number 15. The Last Word at number 16. A little surprising to me to see The Last Word falling after Crimson, but that's the sandbox we're in right now. Crimson is just, it's just really pretty strong. And The Last Word is sometimes tough to use on controller.
Much harder to use on mouse and keyboard.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't use it on mouse and keyboard. I'm trying to remember why.
It's because,
probably it's because it was awful.
You would not be able to hit the broadside of a barn with it on that.
So, you know, even Igneous Hammer still hanging out. People reluctant to put down those good rolls. And honestly, some people still doing some pretty good work with it. So, and then we've got Vulpecula has been creeping up. It's the new hotness, dropping like candy for everybody right now. And it's hard not to take it out. Definitely an archetype that I am not a fan of. And honestly, an example of that archetype that I'm not a huge fan of for PvP. But it's got some very fun perks. So I can see why it's up there. And it's cool to me that we've got, like I said, this variety. My kill feed is not all one thing, and I love it.
I actually think the biggest thing here was like the changes to special ammo scavengers, like not being able to stack them has been huge for primary weapon usage. Really surprisingly, a huge, huge winner out of all this is pulse rifles. Pulse rifle usage has almost doubled since early August. I think they were down at like 5% in early August, and they're up over 10% now, almost 10.5%, leading the charge, the messenger. Absolutely crushing it, rising all the way up to number 4 from 15, I think is where it was at. It's at 3.6% usage, almost 4% of kills. That is huge, 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 huge. I think a lot of it is the availability this last weekend. A lot more people were able to get one. And also the fact that it's just a really good gun. It's been a good gun for a long time. But also, what did we say? There's, you know, there's two ways you counter Vex. One of them is to outrange it. Well, the Messenger is something that outranges it pretty well compared to hand cannons, which a lot of hand cannons, especially if you have inspect into range, they operate on the upper edge of Vex's range, but they're still in Vex's range, right? Messenger is outside of it. But then Darkest Before, just really rocking. And rapid fires have been sleepers for a long time. Rapid fire pulse rifles have always been really strong. Outlast was great. And then we got Grid Skipper, Time Worn Spire. I mean, there's for those who have been keeping their eye on them, Time Worn Spire was really good, but it was kind of hard to get a good roll because the Iron Banner loot system sucks. Then Grid Skipper was really good. And I think Darkest Before is actually the best among them. It doesn't have any super flashy rolls. We talked about it. But it has some very, very good, especially 1v1 perks, those perks that make the gun feel better, even if they don't necessarily damage boost you. And that's a lot of what you want in Trials and Competitive. So Darkest Before is actually all the way up at number 9 now. Didn't even exist before. Very, very strong gun.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's really a good time for pulse rifles as well. I think we're still probably seeing some growth due to the range changes to hand cannons. People are slowly letting go of some of their hand cannons and looking for weapons that can give them the ranges that they were used to, or that can outrange hand cannons, right? Because it's not just Vex. Hand cannons are also ubiquitous. If you want to kill them before they can close with you, pulse rifle can get the job done. And it can outrange them pretty consistently. I think you would be very hard-pressed to find a hand cannon that can keep up with even a rapid-fire pulse rifle.
And we got my boy No Time to Explain in here. Obviously paired with a lot of getaway artist, bottom tree, arc warlocks, as it should be. You know, as annoying as that playlist is a bit, or as that playstyle is a bit, did we not say, I will thump my chest on this, did we not say beforehand, I was like, I'm really excited about this. I think it's going to be very good.
Yeah.
And sure enough.
We did.
Perhaps too good.
And I'm not going to lie, my main for Trials was Warlock.
Ooh, that's got to hurt to say.
And that's I feel like I'm in like therapy right now. Like that's a really deep personal admission.
You're in a confessional at church, right? And you're telling the priest the horrible things.
I did not main a hunter for Trials. I mained my Warlock. And I liked it. So it was, you know, and it was with a pulse rifle, right? I was absolutely living that life and loving it. I actually tried a whole bunch of different pulse rifles. I even tried Vigilance Wing, which I don't think is in the top 100.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is.
Days.
It's 28.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it still
it's
hanging
28.
Out?
It's up there.
Oh, I missed it.
But boy, Vigilance Wing's doing well, too. Vigilance Wing's good. Vigilance Wing is very good. Vigilance Wing and Crimson are two of... They're not really underrated at this point. They're both well used, but they are still a little bit slept on. They are fantastic on controller. Both of them are extremely, extremely strong.
Yeah, no, my main pulse rifle right now is actually a Stars in Shadow so that I can run Traveler's Chosen.
That is no longer on the top 100. It was really low in August. It was like 85, and now it's fallen off. But what's nice about the top 100 is every archetype of pulse rifle is represented, even like
it is.
You've got the Messenger and No Time to Explain for and Legal Action, too. So Legal Action is actually kind of supplanted Stars in Shadow, but Legal Action is kinetic. You've got those three representing high impacts. You've got Darkest Before, Grid Skipper, and Time Worn Spire representing rapid fires. Then you have Forge's Pledge, the adaptive, representing adaptives. Although that, I think, is more of just like a people got a new gun and they're using it because it's not tremendously competitive in the meta. And then you got Outbreak Perfected, which people are like, why is anybody using Outbreak Perfected? Outbreak Perfected is very good when you are under light leveled comparatively because the nanites do additional bonus damage and they basically help to make up the difference for you being under light level. So it's not entirely... uncommon to see Outbreak Perfected spike in usage at the beginning of a season. And then, you know, generally as people all start to equal out their light levels, the usage starts to decrease just a little bit. But
well, you know, the other thing about Outbreak Perfected is it is like a lightweight pulse rifle on steroids in terms of its range. It's just got really phenomenal range for a lightweight. So if you are, if that is the archetype you want to go with, like that's probably, in my mind, that's probably the best one to go with. But opinions will vary.
Yeah. As far as other winners in terms of primary weapons, I mean, really, like a lot of primary weapons across the board are just doing better now than they were before. But you do got to go a pretty long ways down the list before you find one that's not a pulse rifle or a hand cannon or a Vex Mythic class. Way down at number 15, you've got Shiura's Wrath. SMGs actually really, really big winners in this meta. Their usage is up, which it doesn't seem high, but their usage is up like 5.25%. But that's a lot when you consider that it was just over 3% back in August. Shiura's Wrath in particular, the Adept is at 17, the normal one's at 14. You've got the Multi-Mach at 32, the Risk Runner at 72. Risk Runner, by the way, if you're having issue with Getaway Artist Arc Souls, Risk Runner, man. It's like the easiest stuff ever. And then
it is a hard counter.
Death Adder. Yeah. But Shiro's Wrath and Multi-Mach are the two real breadwinners here. Shiro's Wrath, between the two of them, making up almost 4% of kills. Which, you know, if you combine those two things together, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, Shiro's Wrath is very good. It's very, very good. I don't think I could say that enough. If you have any Shiro's Wrath, I don't care what the role is, there's a fair chance it's better than any other SMG that you have right now. We'll talk about that more when we talk about the trials weapons and breaking those down.
You know what scares me is that the next primary down, fucking Le Monarch, it's come up to like all the way up to 23, which is horrifying to me, because as much as I've been preaching it, now I'm worried that's going to get nerfed. A bow at 23, probably is it the only bow in the top 100? Let's look. Maybe Wolftone's up there. Nope, Wolftone is at 78. That won't last long.
Wolftone's new. Yeah, it won't stick around. Le Monarch is very good. We've been saying it for weeks. I don't think we can add anything except that it's a very good bow.
It's going to be just like when I preached how good Arentol was for a really long time and no one listened to me, and then it started to get good. Like, it didn't even get buffed. It just started to get used, and then it ended up getting nerfed, and I was like, well, I've brought about my own demise. Yeah, Le Monarch's usage has doubled since August. Again, part of it kind of counters Vex at range. It's also very, very strong. It's the closest you can get to a special weapon in primary slot that's not like Devil's Ruin or something.
Yep.
Yeah, it's come all the way up from 43 to 24, and that really, really spooks me.
Yeah, you have to know that Bungie's going to be keeping their eyes on it. If it gets too popular, that could be a pretty oppressive meta. Nobody wants to play in a Le Monarch meta. Scrolling on down, we do find our first scout rifle in the top 100, just a couple spots below at 27. And you know that it's Dead Man's Tale. I mean, what else was it going to be? I don't know what else to add there.
It's just weird to me that Dead Man's Tale is still just not really doing well. I mean, the usage just continues. I mean, it's like flatline now, like it's right around like 1.1% usage. But I mean, it's just weird to me, especially now with like Vex Mythoclast. Dead Man's Tale is such a strong counter to it. But I guess people just aren't feeling it anymore after those changes. But I ran into a couple people in trials this weekend who are really, really, really good with it. And I was just like, well, okay. Like, clearly some people still acknowledge the strengths of it. I guess it's just too hard to use for a majority of players.
Yeah, there were a couple weeks where I was definitely maining Dead Man's Tale. Dead Man's Tail plus a sidearm. It's just good fun. You've also got Servant Leader, which is quite strong. Contingency Plan, and then Mida at 62, rounding off the Scout Rifles. And I have been having a good time running the Mida Twins myself, just trying to max out my sprint speed in the Crucible. Just I don't know, just as a something to do, and it is very punishing when you miss those crits, but it is very enjoyable to put Mida into people's kill feeds.
Speaking of punishing for missing crits, we kind of skipped over the sniper rifles. There's still a couple of them up in the top 20. Adored, Eye of Soul at 11 and 13, respectively. Sniper rifles have been hit hard by the special ammo changes.
Yep.
Their usage has fallen from, I want to say they were around like, they were almost 12%. They're down to 8.5% now. A lot of that is because just as a sniper, you're not right up close next to ammo boxes all the time. But if there ever is a Le Monarch meta, which I don't think there will be because of the one reason, snipers are a hard counter to Le Monarch. Like, as a Le Monarch user in trials or in comp, my worst fear is there being a good sniper on the other team because I basically have to avoid them. Because there's just no way that a Le Monarch user can beat a good sniper because you will trade on the shots every time, but they kill you and you don't kill them. So that is a hard counter. So if Le Monarch were to get too popular, I think snipers would kind of, you know, rise up in popularity, kind of how we saw like snipers rose up in popularity to combat Dead Man's Tail and stuff like that. So I'm not super concerned, but yeah, they definitely are feeling the brunt of the ammo changes a little bit harder than the other. You know, fusions have stayed flat. Shotguns are still just really, really popular, but snipers definitely got hit a bit hard.
Yeah. Yeah. The challenge of picking those ammo boxes up off people that you kill was always higher. And, now it's just that much less rewarding. So, but they're there. They're there to keep Le Monarch at bay.
Now, I guess we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about grenade launchers, but man, when was the last time you saw a really, really annoying grenade launcher in PvP? I know people are very upset with Fighting Lion's nerf, and I will agree that it, in retrospect now, you know, even at the time, it seemed like it was a bit much. Now it's definitely confirmed to be, it was a lot. But Witherhorde still sitting up there at 34. So Witherhorde's usage has actually gone up a good bit.
Witherhorde is the only one that I have seen. I have not seen anyone using grenade launchers that I can recall.
Salvager Salvo usage was cut in half. It was up at 37. It's down at 58 now. Was previously about 84% usage. Now it's like 43. Ignition Code. Ignition Code is never super well used. It was 30% usage before at 70. It's 22% usage at 85. True Teller is the same at 88. I mean, if people were worried about a grenade launcher meta, I don't think you have to worry about that anymore after these changes. And were they a bit strong? Maybe. But I think what it shows you is that people were really using the aspects of grenade launchers that were not the skill shot focus of it. I think they were really leaning hard on the massive amounts of blast damage and splash damage. And when you take that away, I think skilled players are still good with them, but a lot of other players are like, maybe not today.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see. What do we have left? I think...
it's just sidearms, right?
Did we actually talk about auto rifles, or did we just talk about Vex?
No, we didn't talk about auto rifles.
And I was going to say, I don't think we did. I think the first one I'm seeing is Chroma Rush at 36.
Yeah.
Which feels about right.
Auto rifles, their usage has like gone down a little bit, stayed flat. But pretty much what has happened is that everybody who is like, oh, I want to use an auto rifle. If you have Vex Mythic Class, you're just using Vex Mythic Class. Because it's, despite being called a fusion rifle, it's the best auto rifle. You know, you've got Gnawing Hunger at 45. You got Chroma Rush at 36. You've got The Last Breath. Scathelock actually at 65. I think Scathelock's pretty good. You know, Sweet Business is down at 100.
This is your reminder that Scathelock has 20 zoom, which is higher than pretty much every other auto rifle. So it's nice.
And you've got, you know, the usual exotics, Monte Carlo at 66, Cirrus Regime at 71. So
yep.
Auto rifles are pretty much where auto rifles were before. It's just, why use an auto rifle when you have Vex Mythic class? And if you don't have Vex Mythic class, you're probably better off using almost any other.
Yeah.
Almost any other archetype of primary at this point. And that brings us to sidearms, which sidearms for a long time have been, I think, the least popular of all primary classes in terms of usage. And there's been this weird little switch where every sidearm that was in the top 100 in August, which was Drang, Cryosthesia, and The Last Dance, none of them are in the top 100 anymore. And we have instead Peace Bond and Traveler's Chosen. And Peace Bond is actually all the way up at 38. Which is, I believe, the highest the sidearm has been in a very long time. I think even all the way back in June, I want to say the highest sidearm that we had was The Last Dance at 80.
Like, yeah.
This is the best sidearms have been. Even they've gotten a little bit of a buff. They're up from 0.66% usage to 0.99, almost a full 1% usage.
Yeah, y'all are sleeping on sidearms, I'll tell you that much.
I will agree with that.
Sidearms are very strong, and if they get any kind of buff, they are going to be tremendously strong. They probably won't, but Peace Bond, very, very good, very easy to use if you got a super high stability roll. Somebody, I posted my roll on Twitter during Iron Banner, and somebody, I think they put it the best way. Peace Bond, a point and click adventure. And that's true on controller. So if you're using it on mouse and keyboard, I can only imagine how incredibly easy it is to kill people at ridiculous distances. And Traveler's Chosen is just, oh my gosh, it's so powerful. The energy you get back from it off of a single kill. Like I always, unless there's another enemy right there, I always immediately just take the energy and turn it into Arc Buddies. It's tremendous. So these two, I think, I'm just surprised that they're not higher up. But I think some of that is down to Shire's Wrath being very strong and also dropping in Trials, which I think gives it a little bit of popularity lift. Just the prestige of being a trials weapon.
Yeah. And I think the sidearms are a little bit harder to use. They can be, with the exception of the full auto ones, they can be more reliant on crits than the SMGs are. Peace Bond is so strong with a damage buff, though. Like, you can two burst for days with a damage buff.
Yeah.
And Traveler's Chosen is just the most slept on exotic. It is incredibly strong. It's really, really good sidearm.
Yeah.
It's like Drang, but just better in a lot of ways. Anyways.
Yeah. If Drang gave you free grenades.
And if before you got the free grenades, it gave you massive amounts of aim assist and like boost to every other stat that it had too.
Yes.
So long story short, meta's in a really interesting place right now. I think the one outlier in its current state is Vex Mythic class. I'd be interested to see if we get a little tiny Vex nerf. Obviously, what do I always promote is take the aim assist down, get rid of these ridiculous aim assist values. I have a feeling that that won't happen. If it doesn't happen, then bring the rate of fire back in line with the other 360s and take the range down a bit. And I think it'll probably be fine. I think it will still be strong. It wouldn't surprise me to see it sit up near Ace of Spades or Messenger. I think if it was in line with those other two, I could be pretty on board with that. It would be the first meta we've had in a long time that we had three out of the four like main primary classes represented in the top five, right? Like imagine a meta where Vex Mythic class, Messenger, and Ace of Spades are all like the top primary weapons in their class. And then all it takes is one streamer figuring out Dead Man's Tale is good again. And that's right back up there too.
I really have to second. I think Vex's aim assist has to come down. It is such a crazy, crazy outlier. It's ridiculously higher. And sometimes that can be fine, right? On like a gun like, say, Mida Multitool. Has super high aim assist, but it doesn't kill very fast. And it's a little harder to use in this meta and against very fast moving targets. There's a lot working against it to where even if you're landing your shots, there's a lot of guns that will just outshoot you. Vex does not have that concern, and that's why it's so strong. And so I think the aim assist really should be in line with the other auto rifles, or it's always going to be a monster. It just may be a monster with a slightly smaller reach. And as more people get it, I can only imagine it will become more frustrating. So, my two cents.
Very cool, guys. Thanks for listening to us break down the trials and competitive meta. We are going to take a short break now, and I'm going to close this episode out. So this is going to be part one of the trials episode. We're going to come back to you. I'm not entirely sure if it's going to be in my heart. I would love to get it out in time for the Friday afternoon commute back home. I would love to do that. I'm not entirely sure I'm going to be able to because I actually do have a job, which sucks. But actually, that's not true. I love my job. But I have a job and I can't just edit podcasts all day. But bless you, I will try. And we're going to come back with part two, which is going to be a breakdown of all the trials weapons. Awesome. So if it's not out Friday afternoon, it'll be out Saturday morning, and we can all look forward to that. But we'll see you in a few hours.
All right. Peace.